Good morning, guys. This is IT Live brought to you by Academy Sports and Outdoors. I'm Tex Homer. To my screen right is Ian Boyd. We are going to be talking Sarkisian's passing game and what you can do now with Arch Manning at the helm. Ian, how excited are you, man? Just to talk some concepts, right?
Yeah. Let's go. Who cares about basketball? Probably just going to lose tonight anyway.
We will have a basketball show coming out in a couple of hours that Ian is hyped incredibly well. But for you basketball heads, we do have a show with Keenan and Evan coming out later today.
Did you know that Sean Miller, this has been widely reported, Sean Miller was one of the top guys considered for replacing Rodney Terry both times?
I don't know who Sean Miller is. You cannot talk basketball with me, dude.
He's the head coach of Xavier. Okay. Texas plays tonight.
Yeah. Wow. Shocking and crazy. But yes, see, sir. That's my level of basketball intrigue. It's like TMZ. I'm like, ooh, he's playing a head coach that you might take. I know nothing about basketball. I can't even pretend to know anything about basketball. Let us begin, Ian. I was telling Paul yesterday because Paul wanted to talk basketball. We did for the end of the half of the show. And I basically just had to make him talk for like 20 minutes because I have nothing to add, nothing of value. And then he was saying, well, you can talk with Ian tomorrow. I said, Ian's going to have some hot take that I have no ability to defend because I don't understand basketball enough. So I was like, we cannot do basketball with Ian because he's going to say something wild. I'm not even going to realize it was a wild statement.
Yeah, I could, but I guess I'm not allowed to today. So
yeah, don't do it. Because I won't know how to counter it. All right, AR, good morning. Ashley, good morning. Roaster, good morning. Manchester Red, good morning. All right, let's talk passing concepts and what Arch Manning can do. So the core thesis here, right, is that we are somewhat limited in our full playbook in the passing game. Why is that? Kindly, why was that?
Just wasn't Quinn Ewers' forte. When he had like a shot play or something where he had a clear number one option and then like a check down, he could make an amazing throw. But if you asked him to go like one, two, three, he had two things. One is that I really thought this wasn't the case coming out of high school, but it ended up being very much the case. He likes to see it before he throws it.
Right.
He doesn't see it very quickly. He wants to be sure and see it before he throws it. And his footwork does not time well to going to different parts on the field. If he'd been healthier last year, I think it would have been better. But, whatever. It wasn't. And I've noticed even if you watch his pro day throws, he like kind of hurries into his drop so that he can sit there a beat and the timing is good so that he can see it and throw the ball on time. Which is kind of works just fine, honestly, if you know you're going to that first guy. But then if it's not there, then there's no rhythm to his footwork. And so going like, okay, look at this, and now reset over here and maybe reset again, it just wasn't happening. And that's kind of the drop back passing game, even though in the shotgun you don't necessarily drop back anymore because you're not under center.
Yeah, you're just there.
You're just kind of there. It's still the rhythm of it and the timing of it is essential. Like it's everything's designed so that when you get to certain parts of your drop, you're looking at this and that. And when you get here, you're throwing, or if it's not there, you're resetting. Just stuff that Quinn never mastered. He didn't really have to be effective, and so he never did. I think that will be very disadvantageous for him in the NFL, but none of that really matters because for Texas next year because he's not around, and Arch Manning has been drilled in this kind of stuff since he was, probably in the crib.
Yeah, this is like the technical side of quarterbacking. Like this is when you can tell if a quarterback is skilled. Now we think of quarterback skill as arm ability, right? Yeah. Which is true. That's definitely part of it, right? That's a big part of it. But the true skill of a quarterback to know if, like, they're getting training outside of practice, are they a hard worker, is are they recognizing concepts and what are their feet look like? If you can see both of those positives on the field, you know the quarterback works hard off the field. And that's what's important. So Arch has that. And I remember when me, you, and Paul did a, I think probably a deep dive, and it, we were slowing down tape and, like, looking at, like, a fade to AD or not AD, that was Quinn's, but we were doing something with Arch's footwork, and that he could replicate it time after time after again. The issue with Quinn is he couldn't replicate what was going on. So, and when you can't replicate something consistently, what's going to happen? You're going to be inconsistent. And Quinn had that. But if you can keep your feet consistent, meaning that you're doing the same footwork matched up with this route, it also helps your receiver know when the ball is going to be there. It limits confusion, all that kind of stuff. You have a much more potent passing game when you're in the Manning tree. That's something that, like you said, from whenever he started, they've been working on. Okay, so let's look. There's different types of passing. We all know that. But let's kind of break down what we mean and what you need to be able to do. So this first one, this is called a field concept. So imagine, look at the center there, that square in the offensive line. Draw a line through him down the field, split the field into two. And you're either going to pick the left or the right side based on what the safeties are going to do post-snap, the rotation of the safeties. You'll hear about that. Like, the quarterbacks are looking. If you're in a two-high safety and they rotate, they can rotate weak or strong, or they stay there. But whenever you hear safety rotation, that's what quarterbacks are looking for. If they rotate, if they just stay where they're at, that's a two-high shell, and you're going to pick the two-high beater at the top of your screen. If the safeties now rotate and one safety drops down and one stays high, now you're in a single high, and you want to go to the single high beater at the bottom of your screen. But, Ian, will you elaborate a little bit more on that?
Yeah. So in the three-step drop, the quarterback is looking down the field during his drop, which, you know, in the shotgun is like maybe a step and a bounce just to simulate the timing. He's looking back to see if one of those safeties is dropping to the deep middle. And that's it. That's all he has to do. And then so he checks that. And then when he gets to the end of his drop, he should have identified if the safeties are rotate, if one of the safeties is rotating deep or not. And then, like you said, he goes to the next. Then it's a one read play to either side of the field. So if it's like, oh, the safeties are not rotating, it's too high coverage, then he's going to look to the top, to the too high beater. And I should have picked a different one, because this one I feel like would be kind of muddy. But the idea would be,
the corner, if you cloud the corner, you're going to break that too high beater.
Yes. That's what bothered me about it. But theoretically, the weak side linebacker is not going to be able to defend that sort of stick out route by the tight end, because the tight end has easy space and leverage, assuming the corner runs with the receiver down the field. So you're checking the safety. Is the safety staying back to help the corner, or is he kind of hawking down to defend that tight end route? And then I guess if the corner stayed underneath, so the corner picked up the tight end and the safety dropped back on the Z, then theoretically the running back would be able to find open space against the weak side linebacker. But whatever. If the quarterback gets back there and he's like, oh, you know what, the safety's deep, then he's working curl flat on the bottom. The X receiver runs a curl route. The H receiver runs a flat route, maybe even a little shallower than I drew it here. The H receiver is trying to threaten the flat really quickly so that the nickel has to run with him and get wide and get out of the throwing window for the curl route. And if he stays to protect the window to throw the curl route down the field, then that H receiver should be open in the flat. If it's cover two, the corner is going to jump that. But you should have already identified if it's cover two or cover one during your drop.
Yeah, I can probably explain this better if we can draw. Okay, so here is, you can see my cursor, right, Ian?
Yeah.
Okay. So you have the H here going to the flat. So ideally, and you see the X here on this little end breaker, the nickel would want to kind of float out here and sit in this no man's land. So the quarterback has a hard angle getting it on this end breaker on the C. If the nickel stays here, this safety F goes over the top to a single high, like we said. This corner has to stay on X here because if he doesn't, X is running wide open out here. So if the end floats here to stop this X, then this H is theoretically going to be wide open with a quick breaker out there.
Yeah.
So.
This is like Jim Harbaugh loves these split field stuff.
I think you talked about they're a little bit outdated now.
So the problem, so here's the problem with these. And Sark has talked about this on, he did one of those ESPN shows where they actually got him to get into detail on his schemes.
Yeah, that's fun.
So here's the problem is that nowadays those safeties will sit in that too high shell and they'll try to sit there for a minute while the quarterback is in his initial drop before they get back where they need to be so that they confuse him.
Right.
And a lot of teams nowadays are playing, buzz coverage where like it's a single high, the W, the weak side linebacker, would cover the flat, the strong safety would kind of stay there, maybe a little more towards the middle of the field, but kind of stay there and end up playing in that zone that the W linebacker would normally play, but he's playing it from like 8 yards deep, and then that free safety is kind of slowly drifting to the middle. And as Sark was noting was, he's like, from the sideline, when teams are doing that, I can't tell if they're doing that cover three, where that strong safety is actually going to rob anything in the middle, or if they're in too high. And it's really hard to tell. And like we said at the beginning, this three-step drop-back passing game is all about the timing and the rhythm.
Yeah.
And if you get frozen up and you see something wrong, and then you're trying to get the ball out on time, the whole thing breaks apart. And so the way and these safeties also, they'll look where the quarterback is looking. And so if right. the quarterback's looking at them, they'll be like, oh, I'm just staying here too high, as far as you know. And if the quarterback's not looking at them, then they're racing over. They're getting over to their spot or they're getting over to where he's looking. And so just those games have gotten really complicated, and this stuff is a lot harder to execute as a result.
That's why I love that video or that ESPN, because Sark was like, dude, I can't tell the difference. And you can't, because the whole point of disguising what we're doing now with these two high shells is so you can't tell. And then on top of that, you're not even in the press box above it. So now you're seeing it from a flat angle, which makes it even harder to tell the true depth of things. So that's why I liked whenever he said, he's like, look, I can't tell. And which is giving way to the need for this other style of passing called progression drop back, because it's agnostic to the coverage. But before we get there, Daniel West asked, man, Quinn was so damn good at flinging those checkdowns out in the flat with timing and accuracy. Curious if y'all feel like Manning will have the same touch. Not on those flat routes. Quinn's probably one of the best I've ever seen. And this sounds like a diss, but like one of the best checkdown throwers I've seen. Just like supernatural there, his arm angle. I mean, that some of his nicest throws were to running backs.
I go even further. Anytime Quinn knew precisely where he was throwing the ball, his ability to like feather it in to he threw the crap out of the flat and the check down, but he threw a lot of routes like better than most quarterbacks you ever see. So long as he knew where the ball needed to go, clearly. I think I had remembered a couple of checkdowns that Manning had thrown last year that were not quite as good. But then I was watching that, like, Nash has, like, every Arch Manning play on YouTube. You can go find it and just watch them all back to back to back to back.
Yeah.
He has a couple good ones, too. He's good at – Arch is also good at leading the flat or leading the swing pass up the field where the guy – is like he's running out to the flat, so you would think he catches it and then he has to make something happen on his own. But Quinn was very good at this, and Arch is pretty good as well at throwing him open into space so that he can kind of get up the field.
Continue momentum.
Yeah. So he'll be fine. He won't be maybe not quite as good as Quinn, but there's so much you can take a pretty big step back from Quinn and still be able to throw those and be effective.
Right. Yeah, that was just one of Quinn's, like, traits. One of the things he did really super well We're throwing down those, throwing the checkdowns. If you need a checkdown, then Quinn is your guy.
Yep. Or if you need an intermediate throw, Quinn is your guy. Like let him get to a Sean McVay play action game where he can throw like crossers.
Yeah, I remember especially like Jatavion Sanders at the end of a crosser, you know, like on the opposite side of the field. Like Quinn would be money there. That's almost like everything was a two ball with Quinn. One ball being, you know, bullet, three ball being moonshot, two ball being somewhere in between. It almost felt like most of Quinn's throw were in that two ball range. It always looked really nice there. Those are the plays that would make you like stand up, you know, once or twice a game, Quinn would hit these plays that you're like, wow. All right. So we said there's these split fields, which are common at every level of football. The problem now is that we can't always tell what these safeties are actually doing because coaches have designed these entire defensive schemes now to be a disguise. Everything will be a too high shell. And like Ian said, even post-snap, it used to be, okay, they're going to disguise, but post-snap, those safeties are going to cheat. Or you'll see like safeties are off level. Like one safety is clearly like 10 steps in front of the other one, like cheating the rotation early. You could probably get something from there, but not anymore. They're staying flat footed at like 10 to 12 yards, waiting for what the quarterback's doing. So you don't know the coverage. If you don't know the coverage, then you're going to need to go to the progression drop back game. Let's see what we can do here. Something like this. And the reason why is the quarterback is not reading the defense. Now, at the higher levels, they're always going to read the defense and then go into progressions because they're going to want clues. But at the college level, you're just looking at this number one release here from the running back. You've seen this route be successful a lot with Jaden Blue. And then he'll look to the number two, the H, at the end of this drag, and then X on an over-the-ball route number three. So the quarterback is looking at one. If it's open, you throw it immediately. If not, two, throw it immediately. If not, three, throw it immediately. So in theory, the coverage doesn't matter. You're just seeing if a guy is open.
Theoretically, like, number one, you see if they even cover the running back. Because if the corner is in man coverage on X, then he's going to chase him across, and that weak side linebacker has to get out on the running back on the mesh, on the rail, the wheel route. So you're just stressing the linebacker, and you're saying, okay, are they going to pick up our running back just like shooting down the field really quick? And if they do, if the weak side linebacker does get out there, or the cornerback stays on it in the flat and covers the wheel, now you look to the drag, which is, I drew it too deep here, I think, again. I keep doing that, apparently. The H is just racing across the field. And so, like, if the weak side linebacker is chasing the running back, then who's covering the shallow by the slot receiver?
Right.
Probably nobody. Or if it is, the Mike linebacker's picking it up. And if the Mike linebacker's picking that up and the weak side linebacker's out of the picture, who's covering X on the spot route in the middle of the field? And if somebody's able to do that, well then, like, do they still have somebody else who's covering the
Y? Exactly. There's a if this then that component to all of these routes,
and the coverage almost doesn't matter because you're stressing the same guys in the middle of the field with multiple. You're throwing a ton of stuff at the middle of the field, zigging and zagging, and the idea is one of these is going to get open.
And man versus zone, it works both ways.
Yeah.
So, like, the over the ball route number three, he can sit down in the zone if he needs to. Number two is running through zones with that shallow drag, so you're good there. And like we said, if they're man, you're going to be out-leveraged in some regard. So you remember when you would see, like, Jaden Blue just kind of walk into the end zone wide open on these quick little short routes? That was almost always a rail route. And Sark teaches in one of his seminars, like, dude, throw this immediately. Like, if this is open, get there. And we see that it has a lot of success. And we've had a lot of success with it, like, in the, I don't know, 20-ish kind of red zone-y range as well.
Bijan ran wide open on these in year one. It would just, like, Sark would do a couple different motions, and then all of a sudden Bijan's motioning over here, then he's over here, then he's running that wheel. And the other team's gotten confused, and they don't know who's covering Bijan, which is like, think that would be, know who's covering Bijan, number one.
Yeah. Well, the problem too, right? Like, say it is, man, you're going to theoretically have this Will covering the running back. I mean, I like the running back beating the Will to the spot, you know? So it's just, there's a ton of it. This is a great play. I mean, mesh rail is all over the place now because of how effective it is. So
the only downside, though, is that because it's all over the place, it's like one of the first things every defensive coordinator's, okay. We're talking about our man coverage, and we're going to start with how do you defend mesh from man coverage?
Yeah.
You know, that's like, here's what you do in man coverage. Now, first test, what do we do against this?
Yeah, maybe it's a core competency.
Although even that, like, if you ever want to drive yourself crazy, look at how often last year the drag was running wide open and Texas didn't hit it.
Yeah.
And especially like late in the year, Texas started running another version of this where the X receiver would run like a post and the running back was motioning slot would run the wheel and then they'd still have this other stuff behind it.
Yeah.
So they'd still have like the spot route and the two crossers, but like say the Z over here, say he was running the spot route from further inside and then the X is running a post or whatever, right? And so then it would look like Quinn would go post wheel and read that, and then he'd have the shallow as almost like number three into the vacated space. And I swear, like once a game for the back half of the schedule, he would look at the post wheel, kind of hesitate, fling something up.
I'd say throw the post regardless.
That was like incomplete or nearly picked or straight up picked. Yeah. And then you'd look and it'd be like DeAndre Moore or somebody just running wide open on the drag. And you'd be like, if you could just get to number three.
Yeah.
If you could just be like, nope, number three. It is wide open. And they never did.
And that's the value of why we're going to have progression passing in theory this season and why it was frustrating last season. But before we keep going, guys, let's hear a word from Academy Sports and Outdoors.
Days like this, the anticipation's half the fun. The call to adventure. Possibilities in every direction.
Look at that.
The stories you'll bring back. Right. Even the true ones. And always, already, you can't wait until next time. From first catch to biggest catch of the season, this is where it starts. Academy Sports and Outdoors. Have fun out there.
So the post wheel you were talking about that Quinn would lock onto, and fans will probably remember this concept. Like, if you guys remember, I can't remember who was it, Florida or whatever, where that safety almost picked it. He started to learn the post wheel concept. And so either it would like almost, he'd almost pick it or Golden would almost get his head knocked off. That's what you have to be wary of. We also caught a touchdown doing it, but you would see like Golden going up for the post and whoever behind it. And Quinn would just kind of throw it regardless. And sometimes it was like frustrating because Quinn was checking boxes. Like he was throwing the ball, not trying to complete it. Just saying like, well, post was there, throw it. That's going to be the interesting part because Ian said, theoretically, that post wheel is not there, meaning your first two routes are canceled. Theoretically, this third route coming underneath should be wide open. And if it is, you can catch and run for a good like 15 yards. So you can get a lot of mileage on these quote unquote, like what the fans would consider like almost check down routes. If you can progress properly, how do you, when you watch Arch's tape or you got something?
Yeah. There's actually another trick with these is that they're good for beating man coverage, right? It's the whole idea. But Casey Thompson is actually pretty good at these at Texas in 2021. But he would use them as scramble opportunities. So he'd go like 1-2 and then maybe kind of glance elsewhere, but be like, they're in man coverage.
Backs turned.
Their backs are turned. Maybe they were able to take away 1 and 2, but now their backs are turned, and he would scramble for like a couple easy pickups. Usually, he may have had one long scramble even on one of these. The blue, Dre McGowan asks, Blue scored on two of those versus OSU, didn't he? I think the ones that Blue scored on were like the post wheel version where the X is running a post. But yes, Blue was running the wheel route I'm reading the question for anybody who listens to the podcast version of this, but if you're listening to the podcast version of this, you should.
It's going to be tough.
Pretty lost. You can
just have them paint the soundscape for you to explain all the visuals.
Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't translate as well on a podcast version when we do these scheme versions, but y'all are going to have to use your imaginations. But, and then, and Blue was invaluable in this post wheel idea, right? Because he's so fast, he can get into that wheel really quickly.
Yep.
Do you think?
I don't know if they have anybody like that.
That's what I was going to say. Is like, what do you do? What do you do when you don't have a receiver? I mean, you can, right? There's chow, right? You chow your back, cheat it out wide. You can tell if a running back is going to be in the pass concept because they end up lining up actually behind the tackle, opposed to the guard. And so if you ever see a chowed back cheated out wide, that's a hint that that running back's going to go out on a route. And it's a common takeaway. I see it at all levels of football all the time. So maybe they chow the back more, and that can let them get into the route distribution quicker. But that was really a huge value of Blue, is how quick he could get to that wheel and how quick he could test these wheels, because they can't beat him in a foot race. So we just have to see if our running backs can crush these wheels to the spot.
Yeah, I think on the post wheel, it's a vertical concept. It's not going to be the same without Jaden Blue. Jaden Blue is, you know, a different kind of guy. He's probably should have been a receiver, honestly. I thought that the whole time he was at Texas. Then it'd be like, no, he's really getting it. He's going to be good at running back. And he never really did. He should have just been a receiver. But Trey Wisner, CJ Baxter, I think CJ Baxter like nearly killed Michael Taff on this in the spring game last year. So you can still use it. It's just not as explosive a concept, but it's still a really good man coverage beater. And then, could Niblett do this? Absolutely, if he still played offense, which...
Dude, and he said, yeah, I knew he moved him to defense. But just a thought. And that's kind of what I agree with too. But the problem is you put Niblett in, I'm a defensive coordinator. All I'm looking for is like rail, you know? So it's like, that's the thing too. It's like, it's a dead giveaway. If Niblett, you just randomly put Niblett in, it's like, yeah, he's going out to pass.
Texas has had guys like that for years and years, way back in the Mac days and early in the Charlie days, there were guys named like Deshaun Hales, DJ Monroe, Dajay Johnson.
Just gave away.
Insanely fast dudes, but they were only good at like a couple of things.
Correct. And so defensive coordinators could just cheat their calls.
Yeah. And even John Childs at quarterback. I don't know if anybody remembers that, but it was like, we have to have a package for Childs. Get Childs in there to run the ball. And so they would develop a package for John Childs and they would play. They would like save it up for the Oklahoma game and then send in like the John Childs package, and Oklahoma would be extremely not fooled.
Well, the most simplified version I've ever, the most concrete version is what's Michigan's quarterback, Orgy?
Yeah.
That was like, that's the distillation of that. Like he would bring it in and everyone in the stadium, it's like, okay, he's going to zone read it. And he did every time. So that's what you want to avoid, having players like when they come in, you know exactly what they're going to do. So that's the tricky part here. So do you think there's any value to a slower back? Sometimes speed is not always your friend. Like, and this is just talking here, but like say the cornerback's like dumb, you know, and like doesn't react quickly. If you're too fast to the concept, you might outsmart the corner and not get him to react how you want him to react. So sometimes there's actually value in like a slower. We've seen this sometimes with like tight, like we'll talk about like a tight end on a wide cross. Them being slower than a receiver actually allows the play to develop more. Do you think there's any value there with a slower back, or just no? We're coping.
No, because maybe in a hot route, because if the other team like throws a big blitz, the quarterback is just throwing the wheel as quickly as he can. And the running back has to be aware to like look for it, like even in the backfield. Yeah. Be looking for that ball out quick.
Especially how Clark teaches it. He's like, get it out quick, get it out quick.
I think you want that immediate stress in the flat to open up everything else. So I don't think a slower back is a plus, but I don't think it's a big negative. I don't think it's a big problem. As long as he can catch, it's going to be a pretty big.
As long as we can get to number two and number three, theoretically, too, right? Like, say the back's slower and he does get covered. Okay. Like, this concept's designed to progress down to somebody will be open here eventually. So
one other trick of this play is in this version, the Z receiver is way out there. Zark doesn't always do it this way. Yep. The Z receiver is way out there. And there are some versions of this play where you have the Z receiver run some kind of option route one-on-one. Mm-hmm. And the quarterback doesn't do any of this. And he's like, checks pre-snap, and it's like, oh, there's no way they're going to have anybody out there to help on the Z. So he drops back, and then he's just flinging it to him. So, like, BYU, when they had Zach Wilson, would run, and he had, like, a pretty good arm. He obviously wasn't all that he was supposed to be, but he had a strong arm, which is why he was drafted high. And they'd have the Z receiver run, like, an out or something against off coverage. And it was, like, open every day, every day. And so Zach Wilson would just drop back and then just go over there and just throw one-on-one and just forget everything else.
So, yeah, so that's important what Ian said. So if you look at the Z receiver, and this isn't most concepts, like coaches will do the progressions like we see. We have X, Y, running back, H are all in the concept. Z is ISO'd. So that could be – it's a separate thing. So Ian's saying an option route. So depending on the corner's leverage, if the corner's inside, go outside. Corner's outside, go inside. You also see this isolated receiver as a deep in a lot of times. And that'll help, but you can also alert him, like Ian's saying. So say that, like, you have Z who's, like, let's say it's Golden, right? Great receiver, good route runner. And then he ends up ISO'd on, like, the number two corner, something like that, an easy matchup. You're going to disregard everything going on in the 1-2-3-4 progression, and you're just going to sit there and throw the ball to Golden when he beats the corner. And you can get some explosive stuff there. So, yeah, oftentimes the backside or the fifth receiver in these progressions will be doing his own thing, and it's kind of a fail-safe. Or if you like the look, you can get a one-on-one matchup immediately.
Yep.
How do you feel about Arch and his progressions?
Decent. Go. I thought – I looked for – in the spring game, it felt like he was doing a lot of good progressions last year. And then in the season, wasn't quite happening like it was in the spring game. Just a little bit more hesitant. I think he needed a couple more games and he was going to get there. I think for this year, he'll probably be really good. Most of the time he didn't even do this, because most of the time when he came into games last year, he was throwing shots and play action where he didn't have a lot to read.
But like he was the DeAndre Moore throw where it was just.
Yeah, we'll get to that. Yeah. He was killing it on those. So.
You got a little smile there, dude. You're like, finally we're able to hit those. Feels good. How do you feel about, like, Georgia when we were in hell? You know, like, it felt like he was pushing one reads in that situation, right? And maybe when you got Jalen Walker creeping around, you don't got time for the second read.
I highlighted on Twitter after the game where he tried to force a post, and it was maybe there with a perfect throw, but then he had a guy running wide open underneath it if he'd gotten the number two. But in the game, he, like, threw the post and missed it and then saw the other guy, and he looked over the sideline and he was like, I know.
Yeah.
And you're like, maybe he's getting it. He's getting it. And then, like, the next snap, like, Jalen Walker threw Cameron Williams to the ground and, like, tore Arch Manning's helmet off or something. So was that.
But I loved that range, man. Like, being able to see Arch versus, like, a G5 versus, like, in hell versus Georgia, to see the range of throwing abilities under stress. And that Georgia game was tough, but I'm glad that he faced that. That level of speed, that level of NFL pass rushing talent. I think that Georgia game was good to be like, okay, this is I can do really good versus UTSA, but this Georgia is a whole different thing. Like, this offseason, I have to be sharper, faster, all of that.
He may not face a pass rush that bad again until the NFL.
Yeah.
Because they have Mykal Williams and Jalen Walker, and they, like, they don't – Kirby Smart doesn't just line them up in one spot where Sark can calibrate and aim for them. They're moving all over the place.
Moving all over the place, breaking all your offensive line protections. Like, man, yeah. Kirby Smart and his little group, they're like evil offensive line coaches. Like, they understand the offensive line in depth. Like, they could coach offensive line if they wanted to. That's how good they are at breaking that position and then moving first rounders around to exploit it. Because, man, that was a masterclass game one, especially of what they were able to do.
We'll see what they got this year.
He actually moved the ball. Yeah.
Quinn moved the ball some as well, especially in the second half. I thought Quinn kind of settled in the second half a little bit. He had like a touchdown drive. Quinn, you could tell in that game that Quinn wasn't that healthy, couldn't push the ball that far down the field easily because of the oblique, which ended up, surprise, surprise, being more injured than they told everybody. And he was playing before it was really healthy. And you could also tell, like, Oklahoma and early against Georgia, Quinn did not want to step up in the pocket and did not want to take any hits to the midsection.
Yeah.
We were, like, kind of trying to say that without – we were, like, trying to delicately say that going into the Georgia game. Like, we're a little bit worried that
– Yeah.
Quinn has no
coded language. Yeah, coded language. Of, he might be a little tender.
It's like we knew that Kirby Smart knew it, but we're just, you know. And then, but then after they pulled him for Arch, Quinn was obviously like, I get it. If I'm going to play, I got to play right. And he stepped up in the pocket and actually hit some stuff in the second half. Not enough.
Yeah, well, clearly, but. The way they read our shifts and motions like a kid's book was insane. Dude, I was – Kirby – but I know but, well, we have too many tells now, especially in that game. But, dude, it was – it did feel like in-game, I was like, do they have our signs? You know, it was like – it just felt – that was a masterful, like, defensive performance. It felt like they knew where we were going with everything. I thought they were – they stallions to us.
It wasn't that hard.
That's the – that's what's especially like, here's the thing too. Like the problem is like all the media is like Sark's a genius, offensive play caller genius. Every defensive coordinator takes that as a direct attack. And so, you know, and so they all like spend this inordinate amount of time, like breaking down Sark, like Sark also being Texas, you get people's best, having good players, you're going to get people's best, but defensive coordinators like take it very personally, Sark's reputation. And when you have a great coordinator like Kirby with his group of coordinators hearing that Sark's so great, now they like, you know, they're spending offseason time on Sark's offense, you know, and that kind of stuff is where you're like, damn.
They had lost a game. So they had to beat Texas to stay alive in like the SEC championship playoff deal. Like you didn't want to take two losses and be, especially that early in the year and then being, because they lost to Alabama, right?
Yeah.
So, like, Georgia played that game as a must-win game.
And they had all the PR with them. You know, they had all the locker room talk because everyone was like, Texas is, you know, going to be number one. And so Kirby got to play somehow the underdog card, which you don't want to play. Nobody believes in this. Yeah, the nobody believes in Georgia stuff, which, man, he's brilliant at manufacturing disrespect.
One other thing on the way they were able to read the shifts and motions for Texas so easily, some of that was – Texas being both a predominantly outside zone team and a predominantly shotgun team. The outside zone and shotgun is just not that great.
Give me an example of kind of like a repeated tell. There was something with a slot motion, right, that was giving us away?
So let's keep this diagram up.
Okay.
The Y, they usually run split outside zone. Because they couldn't leave the backside unblocked because the quarterback wasn't a runner.
So that means split outside zone, say the offensive line is going all to the left. Why? The tight end will go against the grain of the line and block the backside end. So the line will go left and the tight end will go right.
So the Y would probably be on the right side of the line instead of the left side here. running back would be in the same spot. And then the H, DeAndre Moore, they'd motion him back and forth from like the boundary to the field really quick. And the trick of that is you're trying to get the linebackers to shift. And you're either trying to get them to lose track of what their gap was, or you're trying to get that in nickel into a spot where he has to take on a primary gap and defend it. And then it's like, well, that's great. Now we can run him over in the B gap or whatever. But the trick is, if the slot's like moving around like that, then you know, okay, they're trying to get us to change our strength. They're coming with the run game. And pretty much the only running play they have is split outside zone.
Yeah. And so now you're just playing the odds. It's like, I don't necessarily know they have to run it here, but they do. They're, when this motion occurs, 70% of the time you get outside zone.
And not only that, but like, so the linebackers and the nickel or the safeties were harder to fool with it if they really studied you. But worse than that, the defensive line immediately knows what you're doing. And that's what really got Texas into trouble, was the Georgia defensive line would be like, okay, split outside zone right. And outside zone is all about those linemen making lateral footwork and beating those defensive linemen to spots. And you cannot beat a good defensive lineman to a spot where he already knows you're going.
Well, that's the whole point, right? And a defensive lineman inherently is more athletic than an offensive lineman. That's generally why they're defensive line. So you've got five-star Georgia caliber players that also know what you're doing with an athleticism advantage.
So they were destroying the play at the line of scrimmage. The linebackers didn't even matter because he was just getting swallowed up. And there was, yeah, that would happen. That happened generally against any of the good teams Texas played. And then the teams that were, it was basically like a test. Like Texas's outside zone running game last year was a competency, a core competency test for defenses. Like Clemson did not have core competence. Core competency, and they just got run over. Texas A&M, same deal.
Arizona, well, that's also why it sucked. Like
Arizona State was ready. They knew what to do. And even though they had three-star, two-star kind of defensive lineman guys.
But they're also lighter. And the weird part is, remember last year when Rice did good versus our outside zone? Because they weren't more athletic, but they were just naturally smaller, and so they moved quicker. And so it's like that's kind of what it felt like Arizona State is like. They're, remember, we were like, this is a dumb analysis, but we were like, man, they don't even have a 300-pounder, which I guess in like power run is good, but that actually worked to their advantage in outside zone. And one of the problems, too, with what Ian was saying, you could tell from the first quarter if Texas was going to win in the run game. Because as soon as you saw that they were able to do their jobs in outside zone, you're like, all right, well, we don't really have any counters to this now. Not fun. All right, before we keep going, guys, let's hear from David McClellan.
I'm just going to say, guys, you probably need a fiduciary financial advisor. And I've got the guy for you. His name is David McClellan with Forum Financial. He works broadly and deeply with his clients as a financial life coach. And he should know something about coaching because he won several national championships as a swimmer for the University of Texas. He specializes in financial planning and has contributed numerous articles to Kipling on the topic of retirement tax bombs. So contact David today to be your fiduciary financial planner and schedule a one-hour consultation to assess your financial situations. The free consultation is available, so just give him a call. The number is 312-933-8823. That's 312-933-8823. His email is also in the description below.
Okay, so we looked at split field reads. We saw the weakness of a split field read is it's dependent on a quarterback being able to read the defense. Defense disguising too much, even post-snap, making it hard to read anything and know which side of the field to even look at. So then you get into progression drop back, something like this, concept of mesh rail, looking at number one. If it's not there, go to two, go to three, go to four. And if you get a particularly great matchup with your independent Z out here, then you can also take that. But then there's also the shot play, which Arch Manning has hit a couple times for us that we like. And a major concept we see repeatedly is a Yankee concept. So let's pull this up. So you're going to see this deep crosser, deep over, Dover, whatever you want to call it. There's 900 words. Z is running this very deep crosser, and then your X is going to run this post. And then around, say, the 20-yard line where this post is, see those numbers? They're both zeros, but the zeros there, you're going to have some safety theoretically hanging around. If the safety goes down to take the deep over, your post should be there. If he falls back to take the post, your deep over should be there. It's a very clean concept. It's used all the time, NFL. It's kind of beautiful in its simplicity, but this is a shot play often paired with a play action run. So, Ian, let's learn a little bit about shot plays and about Yankee.
Well, this version of it would be more of a play action deal. There are other ones that are like three-step types. I guess that's the difference if you call it Yankee or Y cross, is whether it's three-step or play action. I don't know. You never inside zone duo, it's all the same thing. But you can run this as a three-step play where like the Y tight end maybe crosses the over and maybe not quite as deep as this. And then you have the post on from the same side or the opposite side.
You want me to pull up your Y cross version of it?
That'd be great.
Okay.
I can pull it. Also, this is also like there's so many words and things. It is
a little bit visual.
A little muddy.
All right, let's look at this. Let's look at your version here. I believe this is it.
No, that's pretty much the. Well, whatever. It doesn't have to be play action. Like you could have the tight end running the over route and you could have the slot receiver running a flat route to the same side. And this one, there's a Z running a deep in on the outside. And you can turn it into a five guys out into pattern read. And then your first you're looking at that boxed safety. It's like, does he cover the post or does he cover the crossing route? And then you make him wrong. And then if you get there and it's like, they're both covered somehow because they have both safety shifted over or the quarterback can't tell and he doesn't want to risk an interception. Then you can work down to a check down to the running back or slot receiver down in the flat, or you can work to all the way to the other side of the field where the Z receiver is running it in. Because if maybe they have both safeties involved to cover both the post and the over, then who's helping the corner on the deep end? It's probably nobody. So this
is paired with an outside zone, split zone.
Yeah. So this can be like this. It can be a play action where it's probably just a one read shot. And if it's not there, check down. But it can also be more of a three-step deal where he gets back and he reads that, but then he can get deeper into the progression, throwing the deep end or whatever. This is a Sark favorite. And it was a Quinn favorite too, because Quinn was so good at throwing that over route. And getting it like over the linebacker's head and under the safety and all that.
And it's a single read to check down, which also was a Quinn strength. So this was really set to Quinn. Quinn could do this. Now he wouldn't really hit the deeper route that often, but he could hit that intermediate. So what have you seen from Arch in the pure shot play? Wow. Deep ball.
He's great. He's really good. He's really aggressive at throwing the post. And
if you guys know Ian, he loves the post. If you can hit the post, Ian's cool with you.
Well, it's the touchdown play.
100%. That's what I'm saying. Especially with these two high safeties now they've created. Like,
There's no better play in football. But there's another kind of shot play if you can pull up either the article or if you can go back to mesh. There's another kind of shot play that Sark has that's not play action and it's not progression.
And it's the mesh rail lookalike one that you have the video of?
Yeah, you either do that or just pull up the mesh diagram again and I'll show you. Well, we can do both. Do the diagram first and then I'll show the video.
Okay. You want this progression one?
Yeah. So here's the deal about these progression schemes is that, like we said, defenses these days, like day one, it's like, okay, we're going to learn our man coverage or we're going to learn our zone coverage. Now, first, we're going to teach you how it covers this. Because this is designed to confuse you and get you out of your matchups and create openings in the middle of the field. So let's talk about how we stay disciplined and we execute our rules against this extremely difficult pattern to defend. Okay? So defenses start, they see these patterns developing and they're like, oh yeah, this is that freaking mesh play. I got to get here. This, I got to communicate this. I got to do this. And so Sark, he installs mesh. He runs mesh some now and again. But then in a big moment, he'll run fake mesh. Mm-hmm. And so in the one that we're about to show, it's not the X that runs the spot in the one we're going to show, but the guy running that spot route in the middle, the number three, he gets to where, you see where the line bends before it goes, drops down, like just under the F and over the number two, it bends inside. He has DeAndre Moore run the spot route, but when he bends, he doesn't like look for a spot in the middle of the field. He just runs down the middle of the field.
Keeps running. Yep.
Keeps running.
So good coordinators, and you'll look for this, and this is also kind of a tell sometimes. Good coordinators will have tiered plays, meaning that, like Ian's saying, on this mesh rail, this is level one. And theoretically, say you run it two or three times prior, okay? You want to condition the defense, right? Get them used to this. Get them to actually defend this play and think they know what's coming. Now it's the fourth quarter, and you need to score. That's when you'll go to the second level of this play, like Ian is saying. That's when you'll make it look like this, but then DeAndre Moore will keep running. You'll also see a version of this called like a thumb route, where say it's Yankee, how we were looking at Yankee here. Let me remove this. Okay, see how this is Yankee? See this Z is on the deep over? The Z will act like he's going to a deep over till he gets about tackle, left tackle depth. Then he will turn around and break it outside. So you'll have everyone following this, and then it'll turn around. It'll look like a thumb route, like you're going back out, and that'll confuse everyone and get this Z wide open. That's the second tier of this play. So you'll run Yankee, 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 and then when they think they're defending Yankee, you break it off into thumb, and you'll score. So that's a huge thing. If I'm seeing a team and like running a passing concept too much, I'm waiting for the second level. That or you suck at defending it, and they're just exploiting. But if I see a team like run a pass concept three times and we've defended it properly, now they're just like conditioning me, and something else is going to be on the back of that, and you got to watch for it. So here's the second level version of a make it look like mesh rail, but turn it into a touchdown play. Let me zoom in here. All right. It's always very fun once I get to this angle. Okay, cool. All right. So we're making it look like it. And then right here, you could OTB over the ball, right? Instead, he just continues on. Boom, touchdown.
So one of the tells, if the defense were smart, is pause it. The tight end from the other side is running the shallow that would be the number two read.
Right, and you'd want a quicker guy to make it happen quicker.
Yeah, so you got the running back running the mesh, and then the number two read, if that isn't open, would be the shallow coming across, but it's the tight end.
Yep.
You got the fast guy, DeAndre Moore, running. You got one fast guy running the shallow that you're never going to throw. Mm-hmm. And then you have the other fast guy running the spot, but he shows outside and then just races down the middle. Looks like he's even selling it as a double move too.
Yeah.
Go ahead and hit play. Oh, go ahead.
Well, I was just saying that's the chess part of football. That's a blast. And that's what Sark can do to you. But also what's heartbreaking. And that's a Manning, right?
Yeah.
Oh, nice. Yeah, and he's right there. Good delivery. Just look at the throwing motion too, man. Yeah, repeatable. So it goes into step, hitch, throw.
Takes him a second, but.
Yeah, he's a little late, but as far as his feet, good there, hitch, throw. And how he stays upright, and just there's not like this kind of like Quinn was bendy would just like, you know, and like throw it off his back foot for no reason there. That's what's solid. But what's more devastating is whenever you see that Sark, and this happens all the time, unfortunately, Sark has been building to this shot play in like the fourth quarter to score, and he's been investing on this concept. And when he goes to level two, we just miss the throw. And that's also incredibly brutal because like Sark's trying to build to this crescendo of like outsmarting the defense, and we just don't even hit it.
That would happen
very often.
Arch was a little better at hitting those than Quinn, yeah. If we're being honest. There's a reason that Quinn's yards per attempt were never that impressive at Texas, and it was that he never quite made the most of these shots.
And why you would see Quinn checking down a lot, because Sark would have to over-rely on, like, single reads. So, like we said, like, a deep shot, and if it's not there, then you check down. You know, theoretically, with another quarterback that can progress, you're going to get to the number two read or the number three read, and you're still going to get considerable yards. But Quinn was almost like all – it was like this all-or-nothing passing style. So it's like hit the bomb or it's going to the running back. And even when we would throw the bomb – that's deep downfield, so it's lesser completion rate. So it's just we ended up in this feast or famine style of passing at times that, like, worked versus Arizona State at the very end, thank God, you know. But, like, man, that didn't work very often. Like, we hit that at the perfect time, but I wouldn't have bet on us hitting that to Golden like that.
The ultimate example of that was the Vanderbilt game, because Vanderbilt made terrific drops and covered up all the deep shots. And people were mad that Quinn threw like a million checkdowns in that game. But all of his checkdowns were well-timed. And they are the reason that Texas was comfortably ahead in that game, is that Quinn was hitting the checkdowns really well enough to actually move the ball and beat Vanderbilt. But there's a couple times where they tried throwing progression stuff at Clemson, and they got like sacks and just some ugly stuff.
Yeah, and they were also sending that 10 versus Vanderbilt. So, like, they were either trying to force Quinn to throw to his number one read into well-covered stuff, so throwing interceptions in theory, or if not, he would have to check down and choose to check down, like, immediately.
Yeah.
And so that Vanderbilt game, is it Clark Lee is their coach? Man, I loved that defensive strategy from Vanderbilt.
They were terrific. I was
really excited. I thought besides like Kirby, I thought that they played us the best. And like we said, not with the caliber of athletes at the other SEC. Like, it was all very smartly done. I'm probably going to go back and watch that Vanderbilt game. Cause that was, it was frustrating knowing that we win. I can watch it easier. But in game, I was like, man, this is a really smart defensive game plan, specifically to counter Sark, but more of a game plan to just like expose Quinn's weaknesses. But Quinn still was able to keep the ball going. So,
yeah, that was if I were going to rank Quinn's performances, that one would be a little higher. Even though it kind of revealed some of his weaknesses, I thought he dealt with it really well.
I agree, because it was designed to basically be like, Quinn's going to have to beat us.
And he was coming off of the Georgia game.
Yeah.
It's like the week after, and then they got a bye that they were able to use to heal up and get Sark back in his lab. With some fresh stuff after Georgia made plain that we were a little too obvious. So, yeah, that one was a little better. Also, they had like a million holding penalties that negated runs. That game was one where it looked like they were just going to run them over late and secure the win, and then they kept getting these holding penalties that would kill those drives. And then there was other stuff like Kobe Black had a pick six that called back for something that was like pretty close, and Vanderbilt. Yeah. It got a little close and dicey in the end, but it was more like they just hung around. Texas dominated them reasonably well.
I do agree. That's like one of the Quinn performances that, like, you know, if you didn't study scheme, you would be like, that was a horrible game from Quinn. But really, if you understood, like, they made Quinn play, like, not even left-handed, almost no-handed. And Quinn was able to still get the offense moving. So, yeah, that Vanderbilt game kind of sticks out to me as, like, one of the more interesting matchups I've seen, period, in, like, the Sark era as far as schematics. All right, Ian. So what did we learn about the pass game here, man? And more importantly, how does it project for the future? Do you think we're going to have more success in the pass game schematically?
Well, I think the progression game will be better with Arch than it was with Quinn. But then that may just manifest in more shot plays, like that one to DeAndre Moore we just listed. Because now if your progression passing game is actually a threat, then you can use your fake progression passing game where it's all a distraction for like one guy and just kill teams that way. Especially with like, there's no better way to spring a slot receiver down the field than with the progression, the fake progression shot play. Because you get everybody spread out running different routes, but really you're just trying to isolate the slot in the right spot to run a double move or to have space to run whatever he's going to run. And we know already that DeAndre Moore is like a key piece of the puzzle next year. So I think
versus Texas, you didn't have to defend like a third read because it's like we wouldn't get there. But if you are worried about getting to a third read or fourth read and stuff like that, Ian's saying you have to spread out more, which means that you're going to have the ability to isolate guys even more. Because some of the game plan with Quinn was just like, just play cover three, like cloud deep, or not cloud, but cover deep and cover short, and you're good. So that's going to be interesting.
I think DeAndre Moore is going to be lethal next year in this.
That's what Eric's saying too, man. Like early round talent, it's got the speed, is going to run really well. Like, and then also remember, like him, Arch and DeAndre Moore were like putting out like Instagram reels or like throwing fades to each other like a couple of years ago. So those guys are going to be a problem, and it looks like they have chemistry. Also, defense will have to keep a spy, or they'll have to respect the zone read. And like you said, so here's some of the things too, right? Like, say the play did break, they do cover it well. Quinn's skill set was not creation with his legs, right? Arch, if the play breaks, something good can still happen.
It kind of depends. Sometimes Quinn made unbelievable stuff happen on the move.
Right. It was, but the feast or famine, where it averages out to like going great, you know? And so that's going to be what's interesting with Arch. So say the play does get break or you do get covered. Arch also knows how to like draw defenders in with the run. Like, remember the play where he just like kicks it out to Bolden at the very end and scores? That's because Arch is using himself as a dummy. So like Arch has that ability too, man, to like run towards the line of scrimmage. You absolutely have to respect it. That linebacker's coming down. Now you can hit the over the ball route. And so there's things like that too that are going to offer a lot of value that an athletic, smart quarterback can exploit. So
yeah, I we've gone back and forth on like, is the offensive personnel better or worse? How do things look next year? But then every time we talk about Arch's skill set and all the things that he'll make teams worry about and all the ways that he'll unlock the offense to do different things, the more I'm like, I think this is going to end up being actually a lot better than the last 2 years, even if the personnel is not first, second round receivers on either side, first round tackle, second round tackle, etc. I think they could be worse across the board
and more effective.
They might be worse across the board, but as an offense, they're going to be a lot better just because it's going to be easier to get synergy. You know, that's like the big thing that you're just saying. When you can get to your second read or third read, is you get synergy where everybody's skill sets actually build on each other, rather than being an offense where like you can kind of attack it piecemeal. Like the last few years.
It's like Golden get open, but like now you have your number three receiver who's your speed guy who's going to open the, like that's where you different traits start to matter. Well, that was fun, man. We got an hour, Ian. Who would have thought? Just passing game, good stuff. Chat, thank you, Ian. Thank you. This was a fun episode for me, and this was brought to you by Academy Sports and Outdoors. Y'all have a wonderful day.